The color red carries a certain connotation nowadays. A red baseball cap today has been elevated to the status of a symbol, while the same hat 10 years ago was just a red hat. So when one looks at the Colorado State Capitol building and sees thousands of protesters clad in red and chanting, it isn't entirely clear what's going on. That is, until you hear what they're saying. As you get closer to the group, you can begin to make out the words. What you're hearing are hundreds of teachers, students, community members, and activists protesting on behalf of Colorado's public school system. The story does not start on the steps of Capitol Hill, though. It begins with Thomas Jefferson purchasing the Louisiana Territory from France. To understand what's happening today, we need to take a look back at the history of public education in Colorado. In 1861, 52 years after Zebulon Pike's first expedition into what would become the state of Colorado, the first legislative assembly of Colorado enacted the state's first comprehensive school law, allowing for the appointment of the first territorial superintendent of common schools. In 1875, the first public high school was constructed right here in Boulder on Arapahoe Street. The school would become Boulder High School. That same year, the Colorado State Teachers Association, or CSTA, was established, later becoming the institution that today is known as the Colorado Education Association, or CEA. Throughout its long history, the CEA has been a strong advocate for public school teachers and educational equity. When Colorado gained its statehood in 1876, becoming the 38th state in the Union, it also gained a state superintendent in one Joseph Shattuck. Fast forward a few years and more public high schools started popping up in Denver and Colorado Springs. As this trend of growth continued, the need for a larger regulatory board became evident, and in 1950, the Colorado State Board of Education was established. Over half a century later, in 2008, the Colorado Department of Education was founded and currently provides resources and oversight to all 1,927 public schools across 179 school districts in Colorado, encompassing over 55,000 teachers and more than 4,000 administrators. This brings us back to March 2025, where thousands of these teachers and members from their communities gathered at the state capitol to protest. But what exactly are they protesting?
We're here to support our teachers and their schools. The state of Colorado government is trying to cut teachers' pay, the school funding, and they're trying to... We're here to support the teachers so that they don't cut that for us.
That was Cecilia Lopez, an elementary school teacher from Boulder Valley School District. And she's right. The state of Colorado is trying to cut funding for public education. That's why she and her 9-year-old son, like so many others, showed up at the Capitol to send state lawmakers a message. That message? Not 1 cent less. State funding covers so many expenses for schools, and deficits like the one facing public schools today are felt in so many different ways.
Our children, our students with disabilities, our funding for food for kids, medical necessities, they're trying to disable everything. It's not okay.
Lopez isn't just talking about the state of Colorado here. Just days before, President Donald Trump signed an executive order effectively closing the Department of Education and returning oversight powers to the states. That provides little comfort for educators who find their class sizes growing and resources rapidly shrinking. But who is ultimately at fault here? Standing in the crowd for long enough will answer that question as people carry this chant.
We need funding! We need books! We need the money that Tabor took! We need funding! We need books! We need the money that Tabor took!
So there's our culprit, Tabor. Tabor is not a who, it is a what. And what it is a piece of legislation dating back to 1992. Tabor is an acronym for Taxpayers' Bill of Rights. And according to the Colorado General Assembly, it is intended to limit the amount of revenue that the state can retain and spend. To quote directly from the General Assembly's website, specifically, Tabor allows the state to retain and spend an amount based on the prior fiscal year's actual revenue or limit, whichever was lower, grown by Colorado inflation and population growth and adjusted for any voter-approved revenue changes. This means that each year, the state only keeps as much money as it needed in the prior year. On paper, this is great. That is, until the state finds itself in a $1.2 billion hole and needs to scramble to make up that change. This year, education was one of the first programs put on the chopping block.
I would say about 11 o'clock or even a little bit before, we had families, parents, students, educators, community members coming out to let their voices be heard, a lot of bread, a lot of signs, just to let our government know that we're not going to put up with cuts to the education department. Education is already being attacked on a federal level, and we need our state to support us and fully fund our schools. We've been severely underfunded for a number of years, and we aren't going to take any more cuts.
That's Jessica Askew, a Denver public schools teacher and parent, explaining her motivations for being at the Capitol. Askew also explained that the red shirts that everyone was wearing were for the education union. The CEA, born out of the CSTA established in 1875, is the union responsible for organizing the protest. The CEA also does a good deal of reporting on what it calls the state of education. Eric Fredrickson, another Denver public schools teacher, alluded to these figures.
Our median income in this country, we're one of the top 10 states for median income, yet we're in the bottom 10% for education funding on our students. And so we should see those things be matched, and we should fully fund our schools instead of cutting more money from them. It's definitely a scary moment to be a teacher. We're trying our best, but the funding is drying up, our class sizes are getting bigger, and you really can't support the kids when there's 35 kids in a room. It's impossible to meet all of their needs because every student is an individual. And the more kids in the class, the less time you get to spend with each of them. So this is not just about us, but this is about the future of our country and the future we want our kids to have. So it's very important that we provide them the education they deserve, just like the education we got.
The statistics referenced by Mr. Fredrickson go much, much deeper. In their 2025 State of Education report, the CEA found that Colorado ranks 46th in terms of teacher starting salary. That salary is reported to be $39,044 per year, while the minimum living wage in Colorado is $65,605 per year. Additionally, the extra stress and workload possibly associated with larger classes was found to be the number one reason that teachers leave the profession. In terms of per pupil funding, as of 2019, the state was over $2,000 below the national average. All of these factors, along with many more, have resulted in what the CEA is calling a, quote, educator exodus. The CEA's website indicates that 82% of educators know someone who has left the profession in the last year, with roughly half of those surveyed reporting that they themselves are contemplating leaving. Of this group, 61% attribute this to high workloads, 38% point to curriculum interference along with the loss of classroom autonomy, and 37% blame falling pay. Regardless of how much the profession may mean to them, many educators are having a hard time justifying their continuation in a position where they see the negatives directly block the positive impact that they set out to have.
Personally, I wanted to make a difference. You know, I had this dream that I could help educate kids in this country and help them develop their critical thinking skills and their knowledge base so that they could be making a difference themselves, you know, so they would be educated and passionate enough about issues in this country that they would also take a stand in ways that really matter. And I think that wraps it up. I mean, hopefully we still have educated kids in the future who are willing to stand up like we are today against so many different flavors and types of injustice that exist in this country.
Mine's a little more plain vanilla. I guess I was sick of my job, my career that I was in, and I like kids and I like history, and it all kind of came together. My mom's also a teacher, so my mom inspired me. So that's why I'm a teacher.
Aww.
That was Charlie Enright and Jay Franey talking about their whys for becoming teachers. Enright is a social studies teacher at Denver Green School Southeast, and Franey teaches the same subject at Thornton High School. Teachers are often asked about their why, and answers like Enright's and Franey's are not uncommon. Despite how different they are, both men have incredible passion for what they do. But in the face of everything that is happening, that why is becoming harder to justify. Fundamentally, what it means to just be a teacher seems to be shifting.
Being a teacher right now means that you're basically a martyr. You are sacrificing your time, your money, often your health, both physical and mental. Every teacher I know is struggling just to show up, you know? It takes so much out of us to create these lessons out of love and manage our classrooms and overcome all the limitations that exist because of our lack of funding. So it's at that point where, even though I love teaching and I think it's so important, it's hard for me to recommend that other people become teachers because I'm suffering and I wanted to give back, and it hurts. I don't know how much longer I can do it.
And I would second that. I mean, it's tough. It's this climate right now. I teach immigrants, and they already have a mountain of trauma that they're dealing with, whether it's their income, it's their immigration status. I mean, on top of that, being a teenager, learning the language, I mean, all of that. So the political climate we're in is very hurtful for them. And we see it, and it's hurtful for our community. I mean, the parents are really affecting it, and it hurts their attendance, it hurts their performance. So it's hard to be a teacher right now, and then to have cuts on the state level, cuts on the district level, cuts from the feds. I mean, like, really, I mean, what kind of democracy do you want to have anymore? America? Really? What kind of democracy do you want to have? Because if you keep pounding us down, the kids and the teachers, you're not going to have a democracy.
Mr. Franey is hitting on something there that Jessica Askew also spoke on when talking about what she believes it means to be a teacher.
Because of where we live, teaching is inherently political, and so you need to be prepared to know that going into public education is an act of politics, and I wish that wasn't the case. I wish this was something that everybody believed in and fully supported, but we have a mandate to take care of our students, and that's what we're here to do.
So what are teachers doing? Well, the obvious answer is protesting and making their voices heard. But if teaching is indeed a political action, then the classrooms and school environments themselves are collections of adaptation and everyday resistance. In the face of all the stress, all the physical and personal demands, funding cuts, and wage issues, how are individuals supposed to respond while keeping their classrooms active and productive? Once again, here's Cecilia Lopez.
I have just begun leading my school as the building rep for our union. I have been participating more with our union for BBEA. I am learning a lot. I have been participating with national union. I want to be more involved, so I am hopefully going to be running for our executive board for our union, so I really want to know more. I have made our shirts that I'm wearing now for our school so that we can be represented. I want to support, and we have our school representing here, so I want us to know that we do care.
While speaking on this same topic, Mr. Franey explained not just how his pedagogy relates to state issues, but how it interacts with federal legislation as well. As a teacher of immigrants, the Trump administration's recent anti-DEI campaign has been a major concern.
I'm not shrinking from anyone for what I teach, because what I teach is the truth. I mean, a lot of people, what people don't understand about, you know, diversity and equity in education is it's really democratic, and it's really about promoting freedom, and it's about promoting what's in the foundational documents of this country, whether it's the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution. Those were aspirational documents about equality and freedom. So being anti-DEI is actually being anti-democratic and going against the Constitution, because that document is an aspirational document. So is the Declaration of Independence. This was an aspirational country, and anti-DEI rhetoric is anti-aspirational. It's regressive.
So with all that being said, one big question remains, and that is, where do we go from here? What is being accomplished through protest, and what needs to be done to keep the wheels of change moving?
Well, we're here today to hopefully communicate to our governor and our superintendents for each district that education cuts are unacceptable. Colorado has been near the bottom in terms of funding for so many years, A lot of our laws limit the amount of money that we could even possibly receive for education, and we are left high and dry as a result. So here in our darkest hour, to take more money away is truly unacceptable. And I hope that they reconsider the budget cuts and find a way, even if it takes some sort of risky legal route, like ending Tabor or something like that.
Well, I would second that, Charlie. I think one, the message today is like not one damn dollar less at all. Find it from somewhere else. Take it from the savings account, the state school savings account. But do not take it from schools at all. Not 50 million, not 1 million, not $1 less. And the second thing I would say is, I think, people need to understand what Tabor is, and we need to really think about, grassroots action to remove it in 2026. That's what this all stems from. Every year, it seems like every year, we got to come back and say, hey, don't cut education. Why do we have to keep doing this? I mean, seriously, why do we have to keep doing this? So that's the message I would like to, get out there today.
Eric Fredrickson and Jessica Askew had very similar answers.
Hope that our state officials hear us, that we cannot have any more cuts to education, that we need our schools fully funded, and we need that to make sure that our kids are ready for their future.
Yeah, we were promised in 2024, they passed, that our schools would finally be fully funded. And now with the lack of funds for the state government budget, we are being told that education is on the chopping block. We just need our representatives to support our future and to put an investment into education. We need them to hear our voices, and even if we can get rid of Tabor, that'd be great. The next steps are to continue to show up, be a thorn in people's flesh, until they know that we have voting power, we have rights, and we are not going to take any cuts sitting down.
That's the general feeling. Teachers in Colorado are frustrated. And with the growing pressures they face from seemingly endless directions, the CEI's educator exodus is becoming very real. But through it all, there is another constant thread, and it's one of staunch resistance. This protest not only communicated that there is a need for change, but it also conveyed one other thing from teachers. They aren't going anywhere.
I want the government to know that we are united. It doesn't matter that it's just one district or another, but Colorado teachers are united. And that it doesn't stop here. We will always fight moving forward.
A unified front of resistance. That's what showed up on Capitol Hill. A unified front made up not just of teachers, but of members of the community as well. Specifically, those members of the community who are the most directly impacted. This protest was full of students. Kids of all ages were standing with homemade signs and chanting with their teachers. At many points, the steps of the Capitol building itself were filled with young students, probably only 10 to 15 years old, leading chants for hundreds of others. This did not go unnoticed by Mr. Franey and Mr. Enright.
It means everything. I mean, they've got more energy than a lot of the teachers do. And it made me think of my kids that are like, they're like, why are you going to this protest? And I'm like, for money, for money for you guys, for money for me. Like, we don't make enough money. And they're like, right on, Mr. Franey. So it really is inspiring. And I always think of these things. I'm like, I mean, these are the days the kids are going to remember. They're not going to, remember my lesson on the, Jackson in the bank. They're going to remember, like, hey, that day that the teachers, protested, we got to go down there and protest too. So, like, I mean, this was probably a great lesson for them.
Totally agree there. These children who have shown up today are the ones who stand to lose the most from these cuts. And the fact that they're there fighting for their own rights is so meaningful. These are the kids that are going to carry the fight when we go. And the fact that they're here expressing themselves and telling the government what's important, I think is an invaluable lesson, and they're an inspiration to all of us here.
You know, I think, Charlie, it also says that they actually do like us. They act like they don't, but they do. They like us.
There's no way of knowing what the future holds for education in Colorado and nationwide, but this day at the Capitol was one of unity and, most importantly, hope. As an update since that day, on March 28th, the Colorado Joint Budget Committee agreed to increase the general funding for K-12 education by $150 million next year. This number is still short of the figure needed to fully meet schools' needs based on current and proposed finance formulas. The decision as to what funds may or may not be cut will now be left to the legislature in the annual School Finance Act talks. For Radio 1190, I'm Spencer Stepp. Special thanks to Juanita Hurtado for contributions to this piece.